Blue Dot Episode 11, 100 Years of National Parks.
Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schlom.
And I'm Matt Schiltz, and today we're talking about the parks.
The National Park Service. It's the centennial year, 100 years of the National Park Service in the United States. America's best idea, according to Ken Burns. And
he ought to know.
He ought to know. He did a great PBS documentary series on the National Park System. But one park that he didn't feature there was our own local Lassen Volcanic National Park. And later on, we're going to be talking to Karen Hayner, who's one of the key people up there at Lassen Park. And we'll also be talking to Craig Ackerman coming up shortly. He's the superintendent at Crater Lake National Park.
And Crater Lake, that's a crater?
It's not a crater. It's actually a caldera, which is a collapsed giant volcanic depression. So Mount Mazama, which was an ancestral mountain very similar to Mount Shasta, it had a massive series of eruptions. And then after it emptied its magma chamber, it collapsed in on itself, forming a huge bowl. And then through the centuries, snowfall and accumulated precipitation filled it with water and made it one of the most deep lakes in the world.
And it's sort of this untouched thing. You can't really even get into it.
No, it's an amazing lake. It's pristine, and it's like Lake Tahoe. Only there's not housing developments all over it. It's wilderness surrounding it, and there is a historic lodge there that's very beautiful. So it's worthy of a national park, and it's one of the oldest in the National Park Service.
First, though, we're going to talk to Craig Ackerman.
He is the superintendent of Crater Lake National Park. Craig, welcome.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
I'd like to know about the first time you ever saw Crater Lake. What was that like? Do you remember that moment?
I do. I actually was the superintendent at Oregon Caves National Monument, and I was working directly for the superintendent at Crater Lake at the time back in 1990. And my impression was probably much like most of the people that see it for the first time. When you come around the bend, it's surreal. It takes your breath away, kind of like stepping onto the rim of the Grand Canyon for the first time.
For someone who's never been to Crater Lake before, what would you tell them? Why is Crater Lake so unique? Why should somebody go?
Well, certainly it is for the lake itself. It's in the caldera. The color of the lake is one of the most unreal blue colors that you will ever see occurring in nature or anywhere else. The other is the scope of the landscape. It's just so large. The lake itself appears to be smaller than it is, but it's 5 by 6 miles in diameter. And when you see that with the 2,000-foot cliffs and the cascades in the background, the scope and the scale of that view is just something that can't be comprehended in a photograph. You have to see it in person.
Crater Lake's one of the older parks, isn't it? When was it established?
Crater Lake was established in 1902. It's currently the fifth oldest park, but when it was established, there was another park that had been established earlier that's no longer in the system in Michigan. So it was the sixth national park established out of the 400 and some that we have now. But it's currently the fifth oldest.
For a visitor that's going to be there for perhaps a day, what are some of the must-see and do things there?
Well, I don't think that anyone could come for a day and not want to take the 33-mile rim drive that encircles the lake. It is one of the most spectacular drives in the entire National Park Service, and I would venture to say that it has views that rival anything internationally, any place on the globe. You're going to see views from that 33-mile rim drive that would be as spectacular as anything else. But what I would recommend for people is that if you only have a day, the Crater Lake itself is like the Grand Canyon in that there are almost two different experiences at the park. One is viewing the lake from above, from the cliffs and along rim drive. The other is to get down on the surface of the lake. Because it's one thing to look at water that's 1,000 or 2,000 feet below you, but it's quite another to get down on the surface of the water and look up 2,000 feet. It really gives you a different perspective.
For longtime visitors, are there some special hidden jewels, some things that most people don't know about that you could recommend?
Well, there's lots of jewels because, like most national parks, it wasn't created for a single thing. If the Crater Lake National Park had been created just for the lake, it probably would be a national monument like Devil's Tower. That's the way the system works. But a national park is created for a multitude of resources that it's trying to protect. So we not only have the lake and the environs of the lake around the caldera, but there's interesting geology, there's wildlife, there's spectacular views, there's wildflowers in abundance. So one of the places that I tell people to go that is pretty much off the beaten path is Boundary Springs, which is an area in the northwest part of the park where the Rogue River is born. And unlike many rivers that come together as many small tributaries, the Rogue literally jumps out of the ground at Boundary Springs, almost fully formed. And the walk up to it is just a beautiful walk along the stream with logs that are moss-covered and wildflowers. And then when you get to the springs itself, it's quite spectacular. The only caveat there is that last year we had a large fire in that area, and it did burn the area around Boundary Springs. So there may be some difficulties getting there as we're doing trail work this year. But fortunately, the area around the springs itself was pretty wet, and it was protected from most of the fire.
Many of the parks are natural laboratories for scientific inquiry. What are some of the interesting areas of research going on currently at Crater Lake?
Well, we have a couple of really important projects that are trying to preserve and protect some species at the park. One is the signature tree of the park, the white bark pine, that grows at very high elevations under difficult conditions, has been stressed for the past several decades by a combination of natural and invasive factors. We have dwarf mistletoe that's attacking the tree. We have mountain pine beetles, which are in abundance now because of the warming climate. And we also have white pine blister rust, which was imported from outside the United States. So all three of those are attacking the trees and putting them into decline. And we are researching some of the resistant trees and cloning those and putting some of the clone seedlings back out into the park to see if they can survive and resist those diseases. The other one that's gotten quite a bit of play in the media recently is that the lake itself was devoid of fish until they were stocked back in the late 1800s. And then because there is not much food source in the lake, the Park Service at that time in their wisdom thought that they would put crayfish in for the trout and the salmon to eat. And what has happened in the past several decades, the crayfish population with no natural predators has exploded, and it now threatens some of the native species that live in the lake. So we're doing research on what we might be able to do to control those crayfish so that they don't exterminate a natural species, which is the mazama newt.
So we need to have a major Crater Lake crayfish feed.
A big crayfish boil.
Yes.
It's actually the recommendation that several people who've seen the story have made is, why don't you just catch them all out or let commercial fishermen do that? But the problem is logistics. It would be quite tough. There's no road to the lake itself. So any load of crayfish that was caught would have to be helicoptered out, which I'm sure would make it economically unfeasible.
Be a pretty expensive crayfish at that point. I'd like to ask you a question. You know, when I think of the National Park Service and people like yourself, I always think about the iconic hat that you wear. Can you tell me about the first time you put on that hat?
I can. I'll tell you that the symbol that you're talking about is one of the 10 most recognized symbols internationally. And the first time I put on that hat, I was very proud to do that. And it was my first day on the job at Shiloh National Military Park in Tennessee. And the hat almost transforms you, not just personally, but with members of the public, because they see it and it represents not only the individual, but the agency. And if you need proof of that, I was in China a couple of years ago and wearing the hat at a very large travel and trade convention where there were several hundred thousand people. And even though they could not read the English that was on the sign next to us, many of them came up and pointed at my hat and said, "Oh, Yellowstone."
Wow.
So it's very recognizable to people. If you put the hat on and walk out in the park, you can assure you'll gather a large number of people with their cameras and children all wanting to have their photographs taken.
When you want peace or inspiration, do you have a favorite place to go in the park?
There are a couple of places that I like to go. In the summer, it's difficult to get away from people if you stay along the roadways. But if you get off the roadways, you can get out pretty quickly to where there aren't many people. One of my favorite places to go is Mount Scott, which is the highest point in the park, just under 9,000 feet. It's not as difficult of a hike as it might sound because the trail takes off from a relatively high elevation along Rim Drive. But it's a 5-mile round trip, and you get up to the top of Mount Scott. You can see north all the way to the Three Sisters area in Bend. Mount Bachelor, you can see hundreds of miles on a clear day. To the east, you can see Mount Shasta to the south, and it's just a spectacular view of the park and the surrounding Cascades. If you want to get even more remote, one of my favorite little hikes is out to Union Peak. It's a longer hike in the park. It's in the south part of the park, but it's a volcanic plug that sticks up and has beautiful views of the Cascades. But the attraction of that particular trail is that you can hike that in the dead of summer with the most visitors in the park and literally not see another person.
That's solitude.
That is.
The National Park Service has been called America's best idea. What would you most like people to know about their parks, real quickly?
Well, what I would most like people to know is that we manage the parks, but the parks don't belong to the U.S. government or to the National Park Service. The parks belong to the people. It's their legacy, and it's both a natural and a cultural legacy. It represents not only the most beautiful places in the park, but the history of the people of the United States. And without the public support of their own culture and history and these wonderful natural places, we won't have them in the future for their children and their grandchildren.
Do you have any special events planned for the centennial?
We do. Our most, probably our biggest event or most spectacular event is going to be the performance of an original symphony that's being composed by Michael Gordon, a New York City-based Pulitzer Prize-winning composer who will be coming down July 29th and 30th with the Brit International Orchestra and performing a brand new composition for Crater Lake written just for the centennial, and it will be performed in the park so that the park and the landscape itself become part of the performance.
That sounds spectacular. Well, Ranger Craig, I can call you Ranger Craig even though you're superintendent.
You can.
I always think of you guys as all Ranger, whatever. Thank
Once
you
a
for,
Ranger, always a Ranger. It's that, in your blood.
That's right. When the hat just says Ranger to me. Superintendent Craig Ackerman from Crater Lake National Park, thanks for spending time with us today.
Well, thanks so much for calling.
You're listening to Blue Dot. And when we come back, we will be talking to Karen Hayner from Lassen Volcanic National Park. And we're back, and we're going to be talking to Karen Hayner. She is the Chief Education and Interpretive Specialist for Lassen Volcanic National Park. Karen, welcome. Karen, tell me about the first time you saw Lassen Volcanic National Park. What are some of the things you recall about those first moments, first impressions?
Well, I was fortunate to grow up in Redding, and so my family and would go up camping and hiking from very early in my youth. So my earliest sight memories are the stronger ones that I have. And I do recall going to Summit Lake Campfire Program and hearing that ranger talk about the mountains coming alive, you know, spewing out lava or growing in their different ways. And that really was quite a strong memory for me, as well as hiking up to the top of Cinder Cone. And then also those smells that I found and experienced out at Bumpus Hell.
And when you were that age, did you think about that someday you might work there?
I had no idea that I would ever be doing this. I just thoroughly enjoyed growing up coming to Lassen Volcanic National Park.
And how long have you been there?
I've been here since 1998.
Okay, so for visitors who may not have come to the park before, a lot of people that live in our area have never visited Lassen Park. And if they have a limited amount of time, say a day, what would you recommend as like a top must-see and do activity?
First of all, I would encourage them to drive along the Volcanic Legacy Scenic Byway, which drives right through the park. And that historic road wends its way through the mountains, and you get a really good view of all the different features that Lassen has to offer, whether it's wilderness, mountain peaks, meadows, lakes, and rivers. And if they have a little bit more time, take a few more hours, they can hike out to Bumpus Hell, or if they don't want to necessarily go out to the fumaroles and steaming vents, they can go to Kings Creek Falls, which is a wonderful hike through meadows and forests to this beautiful waterfall. For a longer day, they can get some real good workout and hike up to the top of Lassen Peak or Broke Off Mountain for some of the best vistas they'll ever see.
What about some of the park's lesser-known gems, some places that people that have visited before may not know about? What would you recommend as an out-of-the-way place, something special?
Those special places are frequented by folks that know about them, and they tend to be in our more remote areas. One that comes to mind is Juniper Lake area, where you can hike to the top of Mount Harkness and visit a historic fire lookout and see that beautiful Juniper Lake with Lassen in the background. And there's also Inspiration Point out there, as well as Horseshoe Lake, which is a great lake to go fishing at. Devil's Kitchen out in Warner Valley is a really remote hydrothermal area that is rarely visited, and it is one of my favorite places as far as to see that type of feature on this volcanic landscape.
We're talking to Karen Hayner. This is Blue Dot, and I'm Dave Shlom. Karen is the Interpretation and Education Specialist at Lassen Volcanic National Park. You mentioned Mount Harkness Historic Lookout. One thing that I always found interesting is that Edward Abbey, the great environmentalist writer who wrote the Monkey Wrench Gang and Desert Solitaire, he spent a summer up there.
Yes, and it was some of those notes and impressions that have spurred a number of folks to come and seek out Lassen, and it's really cool to have had him in our history.
Lassen is a park that's particularly resonates with scientists because of its volcanic landscape. What are some of the interesting areas of scientific inquiry going on there currently?
Well, the volcanism has been a draw since even before it was a national park. And we do have geologists and different types of scientists come to the park on a regular basis. In fact, USGS monitors Lassen, you know, 24/7 for any activity. And just recently, last year, they released a geologic field trip guide to this park, which does show a lot of the scientific research that has been going on for the past 30 years here at Lassen. We also have folks from NASA that are using Lassen, along with some local high school students as astrobiologists to study the hydrothermal areas, in particular the extremophiles and the acidic conditions that hot water has, and comparing them to conditions that might occur or may have occurred on Mars. So we have folks that really want to learn more about the different features in this park that have gone on in the past geologically, as well as what's going on into the future. The extremophiles have drawn a lot of folks. Those are the viruses and bacteria that tend to thrive in very acidic or very extreme temperatures. And these different types of life may offer maybe a solution someday to medical issues or whatever.
And you can find those places right off the park road at Sulphurworks, can't you?
Certainly. You drive right through there on that scenic byway that I was talking about earlier.
You mentioned earlier to me that there's a proposal for a new way of accommodating researchers. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Our new park superintendent, Steve Gibbons, has a vision for Lassen, and it's one that will really, really does look forward into our future. And that is the Lassen Center of Collaborative Studies. And it essentially is to create a facility that would support researchers that come to the park, accommodations, and also like wet dry labs and office space, so that they, when they're at the park, they can utilize these facilities to keep their research going along. And that hopefully that would encourage more researchers to apply and come to the park and gain knowledge about this resource that we have.
This is the centennial year for the National Park Service. And it's also Lassen's, right?
Yes, Lassen became a National Park Service just 16 days prior to National Park Service being created. And we do have a number of events to commemorate this centennial year. And right around our anniversary on August 9th, we have on August 6th a ribbon-cutting ceremony of our new Volcano Adventure Camp, which is a youth camp to introduce children to the outdoors and activities like camping and hiking. Also, there will be a Day in the Park festival that day to invite the public in and see all the variety of things that the park is doing to help take care of this park and provide opportunities for them to recreate. We also have, on August 9th, a naturalization ceremony that will be welcoming 100 new citizens to our country that will take place at the Manzanita Lake Amphitheater. And if the grant comes through, the North State Symphony will be up in the park performing that weekend as well.
Wow. What do you most enjoy about working for the Park Service and at Lassen in particular?
Most of all, I really enjoy seeing visitors connect to this special place and to also be a part of helping to preserve Lassen's resources that will protect its wilderness values and the dark sky and natural sound resources. And we're really working to integrate more of that scientific and cultural research to help us do that mission to protect the park and then also to provide opportunities for visitors to come and enjoy, learn, and recreate in this really special place.
A lot of folks live near the park, or let's say, you know, in Shasta, Tehama, Plumas counties, we live right near it and have never been. What would you say to those people who have never been?
So surprisingly enough, there are a number of folks that I've run into that sometimes that have lived in the North State for many years, and it's their first visit to the park. And I suspect there's a number of other folks that haven't come as well. And I really encourage folks to come. There's a lot for everyone up here, whether it's hiking or just the scenic drive. And also these events really mark a national park that was promoted by local people 100 years ago to save and to have right in their own backyard. If you like being out of doors and you love beautiful places, come up to the park and in partake in one of the centennial events. We have many going on this summer with the Day in the Park Festival. We also have our annual Dark Sky Festival that is August 12th through the 14th. We also have an Art and Wine Festival in September that will really be a wonderful event for you to come and introduce yourself to the park, as well as plan to come back again in the future.
And there are free days too, aren't there?
There are fee-free days throughout the year in the National Park Service, and we've also added one additional one on August 9th, which is our actual anniversary. So during National Park Week, which is coming up here in April, it will be from April 18th through the 24th, and then on into summer, we have during the National Park Service Centennial in August, during the Founders Day event, we'll have fee-free days of the 24th through the 28th. So there are lots of days to come up that you can enjoy the park.
And there's lots of snow up there now, right?
We do have quite a bit of snow, but the Komiamani Visitor Center here on the south side of the park, we have about 15 feet of snow right at the visitor center. And folks are really enjoying getting out on their snowshoes or cross-country skis and heading up. And in between these storms, we have beautiful days of blue skies and warmer weather, so it's very pleasant to go out on the snow.
You've been listening to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Schlom, along with Matt Schultz, and we've been talking to Karen Hayner. She's the Chief of Interpretation and Education at Lassen Volcanic National Park. Karen, thanks for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Dave.
Well, Matt, I hope that, you know, encourages you to go visit a national park that you've never been to before, like Crater Lake.
I would love to go to Crater Lake.
It's only a few hours away up out of Medford.
You know, so many people drive up through Medford so often, but people don't go to the park. They don't go off the road to go visit those parks. And especially when you're from the area, it doesn't seem as special. But it is special.
It's extremely special. And I guarantee you the first view you get of Crater Lake, it literally will take your breath away. It's one of the most scenic places on the planet, and it's only a few hours away. And right here in our own backyard, Lassen Volcanic National Park, with all of the centennial events, it's the 100th anniversary of the founding of Lassen Volcanic National Park by local people here in the North State that worked very hard to get that park. And also the National Park Service Centennial. So all of the parks all over the country will be having centennial events all summer.
So if you haven't visited...
This would be a great time to add some things to your bucket list. And the national parks are America's best idea. They are our crown jewels of nature. Well, on that note, I hope you will visit one of the special places on our planet. You've been listening to Blue Dot, a production of North State Public Radio. Follow us at NSPR News and me at Dave Schlom. And I'm reminding you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.